Andrea, you and Christina Wilkie did a story recently in the Huffington Post where you looked at the National Women's History Museum that's been in progress for about 16 years. Can you just give us a quick overview of how the idea started and where it is now?
Sure. Actually, the first time I wrote about the museum was last summer when it was brought to my attention that there was this museum project. And actually, there had been quite a bit written at the time about conservatives in Congress who were opposing the museum. The conservative women of America had written to a couple of senators, Republican senators, saying they were worried that this museum was going to be all about abortion rights. And anyway, it got a lot of play back then. And I wrote a story last summer talking about how the museum had changed some things on its website to make it more conducive to conservatives. And I kind of forgot about the story until a few months ago it was brought to my attention that the place was just a total mess inside. After 16 years, there's really no there there. And we found in a two-month investigation everything from a lack of buy-in or involvement from the women's history academic community to some very questionable management things going on, possible conflicts of interest by board members and who also are vendors, and just a whole bunch of things that after interviewing over 40 people, we came to realize that unlike some other museum projects in Washington, they just didn't have anybody there who really knew what they were doing.
Are the founders any closer to having an actual museum?
Well, the people who are involved have been sort of this rotating cast of these women. Some of them, the president of the museum, Joan Wages, we found out is a former lobbyist for the Flight Attendants Union. She's not a historian. In fact, she doesn't even have a graduate degree from a reputable institution. We found out that she actually had a master's from a diploma mill, and on the website of the museum, it actually said she had an MBA. And until we asked about it, it seemed like she, had at least a business degree. But it turned out that that was, according to them, a typo. There was no B. It was just an MA.
That's
from a school that was not accredited, and that the California Attorney General later shut down as a diploma mill. And this was a woman, who is in charge of this operation. The second person, the senior vice president of the board and one of the founders of the museum is Ann Stone, who's not related to me, is the former wife of Roger Stone, who's a notorious Republican dirty trickster here in Washington, and who's also the head of something called Republicans for Choice, which the Center for Public Integrity did an investigation about a couple of years ago, showing that it hasn't given money to federal candidates in years, and it's been used, according to them, as a piggy bank for Ann Stone to pay her expenses, her travel, or even her parking tickets. And what we found at the museum was that Ann Stone is not only a board member, but she's also one of the main direct mail vendors. She has a couple of companies that do direct mail fundraising, which, by the way, is not a very efficient way to raise $400 million, which is what the museum says it wants to raise. And has been making money off of this, at the same time contributing in-kind donations of time, the equivalent of more than a year's worth of labor for most people, in addition to running a PAC and two separate businesses. So we found a lot of different things that, while on the surface might not be illegal, the nonprofit experts that we talked to said they were definitely raised eyebrows.
How much money has been raised to date?
Well, that was a funny thing. They kept saying that they've raised over $6 million. But when we looked at some of the IRS forms and some other documents, we counted at least $10 million. And that wasn't even for the full life of the museum since it was incorporated. So when we actually went to the museum's headquarters, which is this little, rundown section of Alexandria, Virginia, in this nondescript office building. And we met with Joan Wages and a couple of members of the board, and they're high-priced lawyers. When we told them that, we had found that they'd actually raised more, they were surprised, but happily so. They said, well, that's good news, We raised $10 million instead of six. Well, it seemed kind of odd that they didn't even know how much money they'd taken in.
And who's donated what they have so far?
Well, mostly it's been small donations. They have not gotten the kind of foundation. They've gotten maybe a couple of foundation grants, but not the kind of major foundation support that an enterprise of this would call for. in the course of our reporting, we talked to Foundation people here in Washington, and they talked to us on background, but these are people who are involved in the biggest projects, development projects here in the Capitol. And they just, you know, were not impressed. I mean, one person from a very high-profile foundation told me that, you know, he doesn't even, you know, he never really heard of these people, you know, after 16 years. He was just amazed that they hadn't made more of a splash. But they're, you know, Meryl Streep has pledged $1 million, and she's already delivered $400,000. But after we contacted Meryl Streep and told her some of our findings, she basically was very concerned, and she made a statement that she was basically very concerned and said that she was hoping that the board of the museum would take action to remediate any problems. So it's going to be interesting to see how that plays out in the next few months. She did say, after being involved with the museum for 4 years, she had never been invited to a board meeting. After our story came out, she was invited to a board meeting, and she said she's definitely going to be coming to that one.
So Wages is the museum's president and CEO, but she's also the chair of the board of directors, or she has in the past.
Well, she's been basically wearing several hats. They don't really have a separate chair. And when we asked them about that, they did admit that, yes, it would be best practice to have a chair and that they were looking for one. But, I mean, I think what was interesting to us was that they did so many different things, like they named a scholars committee, which they had never had a scholars committee for years. Until they heard that we were working on a story. And they were sort of like playing catch-up. All the things that we were finding out that they hadn't really been doing, they started to do.
So what's their programming been? They've done exhibitions and they've done this online programming?
They've had what they call 4 traveling exhibitions, which really have been in D.C. or New York. The last one was put on in 2006. They haven't had anything since then. Mostly they're a website. And what we found in our reporting was that much of the content that is on the website was written by interns making $5 an hour. And that some of their work was, you know, overseen by a historian who was making $225 a month. And there were no PhD historians. There was, you know, basically, and when we asked, well, so how do you decide what gets put up there? I mean, it was just sort of whatever, you know, whatever comes to mind.
So they don't really have a professional curator.
There is nobody. Well, they have somebody who they call a curator, but she gets paid $225 a month.
That's not very much.
Speaks to to that. I don't know what to say about that. But
well, where's all the money they've raised? I mean, where has it gone?
Well, that's a good question. A lot of it's been gone to direct mail to, you know, Joan Wages makes $170,000 or so dollars a year.
That seems like a lot.
Well, I mean, actually, yeah. In Washington, that's not that much money to be the head of an enterprise of this kind. But, you know, there's rent and all kinds of things that they but, I mean, it's not that unusual for a startup nonprofit to spend a lot, you know, at the beginning. But basically, they only have about $1 million in the bank. According to them.
What about the rest of the board? I mean, do they have...
As I reported last summer, they brought on a lot of very well-connected Republican women who were brought on for their conservative or Republican credentials. That's the other thing that we found was that that Joan Wages, while I think she's nominally a Democrat, most of the board, with maybe a couple of exceptions, are Republicans. And they say that they're a nonpartisan, you know, nonprofit. And really, I mean, there are a couple of people who have some involvement in women's organizations, but basically it's not a very impressive board. Here in Washington, if you look at the boards of you know, similar organizations, you'll find corporate leaders of big corporations, and you'll find a lot of really wealthy people. One thing that we found was that, you know, the members of the board give very little in cash donations, while Ann Stone gives a lot of hours on paper. In terms of writing big checks, which a lot of, you know, nonprofits like this require, they don't have it. And we also found that when they tried to bring in people who were professional development people and, you know, people who'd been involved in you know, big projects like this, and they started asking questions, they were basically, you know, booted off the board. And, you know, they didn't want any questions asked.
This is Women's Focus on KUNM. I'm Megan Kamrick, and you're listening to an interview I did earlier this week with Andrea Stone of the Huffington Post. She and her colleague, Christina Wilkie, published an article earlier this week looking at why the National Women's History Museum has made so little progress over the last 16 years. Does the museum have any valuable holdings to speak of?
Well, you know, that's the interesting thing. When we went to the office, they do have a small collection that was donated by an amateur historian from West Virginia who just was interested in women's history, and she actually took her collection around West Virginia in an old school bus. But it's been valued at about $100,000, and I took a look at it, and I'm not an expert, but, I mean, there were some really, you know, valuable pieces in there, you know, worth thousands of dollars of things from Susan B. Anthony and Harriet Beecher Stowe, and just, like, the names that you would hear from some of the legendary women pioneers. So there is some, you know, some good stuff in there. It's not the makings of a museum on the National Mall, and that's the other thing, is that I think that they're expecting, and they've said as much, that once they get a building site, which has been their main, that's been their main obsession, is to get this building site and very little else, that they're going to just have the Smithsonian Institution lend them almost their entire, you know, exhibit. And, you know, I spoke to somebody at the Smithsonian, and, you know, there are Smithsonian affiliates all over the country. I'm sure there are in Albuquerque, but they don't just, like, send their stuff out. There's, you know, a lot of hoops to go through and a lot of requirements. And, you know, given the management that we see so far, you know, it's a big if that the Smithsonian would, you know, give them a lot of stuff to display.
It's certainly not easy to get a new museum on the National Mall, right? I mean, is this a viable excuse as to why this has taken so long?
Well, you know, they want to be on the mall. You know, the mall is controlled by Congress. And for anybody who's come to Washington as a tourist, you know, that's where all the Smithsonian museums are. But there's a lot more to Washington. And some of the, you know, most popular museums are not on the mall. And I think if they had gone another route where they said, okay, maybe we'll go a block or two away, we wouldn't have had to go through all these hoops. And it's such a politically fraught situation. They've been trying to get a bill for years and have really done very little. I mean, for a group that is basically run by lobbyists, they haven't been very successful in their lobbying. I don't think I'd want them on any issue that I had.
What, have women been reluctant to speak out about this?
Very reluctant. And, you know, when it was brought to me, you know, the thing is that when I wrote about this last year, the story was definitely conservative Republicans, men who, you know, thought that, there was already a cowgirl museum and there was a garden museum and why we need another museum.
Oh, so I guess that covers it.
Right. But the thing that was different here was that every single person we talked to, without exception, wants to see a women's museum. Or a few of them said, well, we don't know that we want to see a separate women's museum. You know, why segregate women out from the rest of history? And, you know, if the Smithsonian's American History Museum here on the Mall did a better job, I mean, you go there and basically you see the First Lady's gowns and, you know, not a whole lot more. But on the whole, we didn't even go out to speak to conservatives. We wanted to speak to people who really are troubled by this but don't want to speak out against it for the reason that they were worried that conservative opponents or, you know, male chauvinist opponents would take up our story and run with it. So I don't know. I mean, I mean, we really were kind of careful about that. And what we said to people was, you know, we're not out to kill this museum. I mean, it's sort of like it really needs sort of to be saved from itself. And I think that I think Meryl Streep definitely felt that way. But I have to say that there's been a deafening silence from members of Congress who have been co-sponsors of the bill. We're trying to reach out to them to get their thoughts on this. It's interesting that, you know, the museum has hired Lanny Davis, who was President Clinton's lawyer during the impeachment trial. And he's a very high-powered guy here in Washington who, you know, basically when you hire him, you're in a lot of trouble. So they hired Lanny Davis, but the interesting thing is that despite all their hemming and hawing, they have not requested a correction or a clarification from us, which I think we feel very solid in what we found. And as a matter of fact, we're planning future stories because since the story first went up on Sunday, we've been getting unsolicited emails from people saying, you know, that's exactly what I found when I was there, or, you know, let me tell you something. So, you know, we don't think all the shoes have dropped. I definitely think, you know, will the board take action? I mean, will Meryl Streep you know, insist that new leadership is needed, you know, that's a question. So, you know, stay tuned.
Is there any recourse to get more transparency on this?
You know,
you guys
are doing it,
of course.
I think if people stop giving money to this organization, or if perhaps some high-profile women came out and said, you know, we should really... I mean, one of the things that we included in the story was, you know, and we didn't call any of these people up, but we suggested here are some the kinds of names of people that you might want to think about. And we named, you know, sort of the presidents of Harvard and, you know, Donna Shalala, who was the HHS secretary and is now at the University of Miami, and Laura Bush. Laura Bush, she raised hundreds of thousands of dollars, maybe millions of dollars, for the new Smithsonian African American Museum that just broke ground a couple of months ago. And really, you know, that kind of a name, whether it's a Democrat or Republican, I don't know that it really matters. It would be nice to have both. But if somebody with some stature would stand up and say, you know, this really needs to happen, and, you know, let's get some people in here who know about building museums, who know about fundraising, who know, you know, just know what they're doing.
Well, Andrea, sounds like we should stay tuned and keep watching what you guys write.
Yeah, I'm interested to see what we're going to write, too. But I definitely think that was not the last story we'll be writing about this.